It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay, so I might have found a new thing to obsess about. And it's imminently accessible to most people because it's on Netflix.
So you think everyone else should obsess about it too?
I'm just saying they can.
Okay.
I feel like that's a step up. You do sound weird. Your mic sounds weird, but I can hear you fine. But right,
I'll check it. I'll check it real quick.
No, I just think it's better than when I usually talk about what I'm obsessed with and no one can approach it at all. So this one, you can be like, what the crap is wrong with Tony? But this is on Netflix. My wife actually discovered it and then pointed me there. And it is a Japanese show from a long time ago called Old Enough. And it appears to have one season of 20 episodes that are approximately 10 minutes each.
Toddlers running errands or something, right?
Yes, exactly. It is extremely young children who have no business having any sort of responsibility being given responsibility. And it sucks me in like a weird, like I have very, it's the reality TV thing again. Like I have very strong feelings about these children. Just the first episode, a 2-year-old gets sent across a highway to a grocery store, to a full-on grocery store, to pick up 3 specific items, purchase them, and bring them back home. And they are not inconsequential items. 2 of them are to make dinner, and 1 of them is flowers for his dead grandma. That's a pretty serious thing. And he manages to forget the main one, which is the sweet curry for the dinner. The little curry cake things. He just got the flowers or whatever, and he left. And we're all just like, well, he's 2. This is still really good for a 2-year-old. This is great. And then he stops in the street and says out loud, I have to go back. I forgot the curry. And I had to turn the episode off because it was just too much happening. I was like, oh my God, he remembered. The 2-year-old remembered. And he's adorable because his mom was also very careful and made him a flag for crossing the street. So that he like holds it out and the cars know to stop and things. But it's as much as my heart can handle right now is watching a 4-year-old go to make juice for his family. Or maybe not make juice and play a bunch and make me be like, your family's waiting for that juice. Why are you screwing around? So I'm pretty into it so far. I haven't got anything of animals doing something crazy. So now it's kids. Kids are like animals. So that works. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world that still claims the title of most erotic piece of media that was refused by NPR in a segment in which they were trying to talk about eroticism for not being erotic enough. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 580.
See, this is a thinker. This is,
I didn't follow that at all.
I know, right? Right? No,
I did not follow it at all. Sorry.
Okay. So here's the category.
Okay.
So the presumption in this is that NPR at some point was making requests for erotic pieces of media.
Okay.
And the assumption is that we were submitted as one of these pieces of erotic media. Okay. And that we were refused for not being erotic enough.
Oh.
And so my combination of NPR and us implies a very low level of eroticism. But the fact that we got refused, which means we got submitted, implies that we were trying to be erotic. And yet we're so bad at it that even NPR rejected us for a lack of eroticism. And on the grounds that we are probably the only piece of media for whom that has ever happened, we technically qualify as the most erotic piece of media for whom that has happened.
Okay.
I don't have a lot going on these days. I can't, until we have shaken the last of winter, I just don't know what I'm going to do with myself. We literally hit 80 one day and then went below freezing 2 days later. Yeah, I don't,
crazy, right? Frost warnings and everything.
It's bad. I don't like it. It makes it really hard to plan things outside. The cooking situation is weird for me, because it's sort of a seasonal show. I think we've talked about how we cook sort of seasonally. There are certain dishes that are the cold weather dishes, and certain dishes that are the warm weather dishes and things. And I don't know what to cook right now. It's insane. So
yeah.
Those of you just joining us, we have very little eroticism. What we do have is a hat that is magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And all sorts of people from all walks of life and different time periods and galaxies, even, maybe. Write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with whatever the crap they want. And the hat magically, all on its own, forwards them to us. And we talk about them till we're bored, and there's the show.
Yep. Are you all right?
Yeah, I'm all right. You're just scared because the fan's not moving. Otherwise, you know for sure. So, what's going on with you, schoolboy, back in school?
First of all, I want to say I really appreciated Azure Talon sharing some more stuff on the blog about his experiences. I thought it was very, very interesting. I've been thinking about all of that stuff quite a bit, actually, since he shared it, because it's just interesting, very interesting stuff.
Per my contract, I'm unable to comment, but go ahead.
Also, we finished, all the four seasons of Star Trek Discovery. I mean, there are going to be more, but there's only four so far. And so it's interesting because I think you remember me telling you that there were a lot of things about the first season that seemed to not be in accordance with the way Star Trek usually works. And I do think it upset some people. I mean, I think right now the Rotten Tomatoes score for critics is in the high 70s, but the audience score is in 36 or whatever, because a whole bunch of Star Trek fans, critic bombed it or whatever. But then season two, pretty much undid all of it. Like they knew that they'd upset people. So you're watching season two, and by the time you get to the end, you realize, oh, they just undid all of those things, basically. And not in a way that was particularly surprising. You probably could have predicted that they were going to do this. In fact, Abby did predict before the season 2 even started, she predicted that they would do this. But it still was kind of fun to watch. I mean, it was a fun season. It was like, oh, okay, well, you know, they retreated on that stuff, but it was okay. We liked
they were
it.
Like,
it was
fun. Never mind.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just need some retooling and then the whole thing.
Well, right. Retooling. That's the word I was trying to think of before. But a lot of times when a show retools, it's so awkward. You know, it's not done very well. They'll do it like in the first 2 episodes of the second season. Everyone's in a different city or a character is just gone. But it wasn't like that at all. There was a nice, smooth arc. They got there in a very, like I said, not particularly creative or surprising way, but it was still compelling and interesting. So we were like, yeah, okay, that's fine. Yes. We weren't bothered by the things they changed in season 1. I thought some of the stuff was actually kind of interesting, but you know, fans didn't like it. So they backed off on pretty much all of it. Then season 3 came along and we realized there were a couple other things they wanted to back off on that we were more disappointed than they backed off on.
Oh no.
The one main thing is, in the first 2 seasons, the main character, now remember I said that unlike other Star Trek shows, they don't seem to be very ensemble oriented. They're really oriented toward this one character. And actually, when we ran out of Discovery stuff, we did watch Picard. And even Picard isn't all just about Picard. There's lots of scenes and stuff that he's not in. But this show is very...
Other than Kevin J. Nashford, there's never really been a solo focused.
This show is really focused on this character. And things about the character's background and whatever it's a female character and she's rather stoic, which is fine. We don't have a problem with that. But as you know, from characters like Brie Larson's Captain Marvel, general audiences don't like stoic female characters, right? They complain about that. They don't smile enough and all this nonsense, which I hate. You know, I hate that. But at the beginning of season 3, they had a plot device that made it so that she didn't have to be that way anymore. And she's really smiley now. This actor is so good. We love her. She's great. And it's nice that she gets to show a certain kind of range, but there's a challenge to the whole stoic thing that I think is worthy of a good actor also. And I thought she was doing it just fine. And so I feel like they sort of compromised their principles there by caving into the, well, we need her to smile more because people don't like her. And that was a little disappointing at the beginning of season 3. But that there was one more thing they needed to correct throughout season 3 that I won't mention because it's a plot issue, but I bring it up because the upshot is episode 1, season 4, we realized while we're watching it, this is the first time that the show had all of the elements that most Star Trek fans would have wanted to see in season 1. Mm. And it took them kind of messing up, not messing up by our standards, but by a lot of fan standards, messing up season 1, doing most of the heavy lifting to fix it season 2, and then, you know, doing some minor cleanup in season 3. And now season 4, this is what the fans wanted, was what season 4 is.
Nice work if you can get that many chances.
And season 4 is good. I mean, I thought it ended pretty weak, but overall, it's very good. Abby was very sad that we ran out of episodes. She likes it a lot. It is amazing, though, that all of those ups and downs happened and all that retooling happened, and yet it's still watchable. You know, it's usually when a show retools that much, it's a mess, you know, and you can barely even recommend it.
It's usually a sign that things are ending. If a show can get it early enough, though, Fringe is always the example I hold up. Fringe had a terrible first half of a season, and then the second half of the season, they didn't even like write out people and things. They just told every person on the show to act differently.
It was really weird and abrupt. And
then it worked, though. But then suddenly the show was good.
Right. Well, that's no, this
yeah, every, that was the whole thing is like, no, everybody gets a different personality and go.
Yeah, no, this was actually very well done, and I give a lot of credit to the writers and the showrunners. I mean, but also the actors. Man, the acting in this is so good, and some of the writing is really good. So, but
the gripping is so-so.
There's still a problem with having the show focus on a single character rather than an ensemble, because here's the thing. A lot of the creative choices they made in season one were around that premise of we're going to have a main character, right? As soon as you make that decision, we're going to have a main character, there's like secondary decisions that are related to that. And some of what they fixed in the second and third season got rid of those things. And so now this primary character strategy stands out even worse than before. I mean, the main character is in situations that make no sense, is making decisions that make no sense, except that you've got to stick to this concept that it's the main character, you know? And like, why is this character in this scene? Well, they have to know what's going on for later when they solve all the problems. Well, why do they have to solve all the problems? In Star Trek, everybody gets a chance to solve problems. Well, because we have this main character thing we're doing, and so that's how it has to be. So I think they need to fix that. I think the main actor is very good, and she's perfectly capable of carrying the show. That's not the problem. The problem is Star Trek doesn't usually work this way, and it's not working for them either. So I hope next season they they start to let the rest of the cast do things, because honestly, sometimes the only thing the supporting cast, other bridge officers, what I'm talking about, all they get to do, they don't even get to speak in an episode. They just to give surprised looks or looks of admiration when the captain gives a stirring speech. I mean, that's just not how it should work. It's not interesting. It's not how Star Trek usually works. And they're at this point, they have to shoehorn the main character into situations that don't even make sense for her. So. But I would recommend it anyway. To anyone who likes Star Trek, I'd recommend it. I think it's pretty good. And it's only four seasons right now, and they're short seasons.
If any of you are listening and have pull with Paramount, please let them know. And hopefully do we know it's getting a season 5?
Yeah, we do.
All right. Well, hopefully by then, if William's message can get to them fast enough, they can retool.
Are you going to watch it at all, do you think, or...? Is it just a matter that you don't have Paramount Plus that you're not watching it, or?
I don't know. I don't really care.
Okay. I mean, you said you're kind of over Star Trek.
I mean, I've gotten the, you know me, I can only take so many sequels and reboots and things. And Star Trek, which is a much beloved property of mine, I'm like, yeah, I get it. I mean, I don't know. I'll tell you this much, and I'm curious if we had Paramount Plus, I definitely would have watched Lower Decks. Did you watch Lower Decks?
I had not yet.
That looks real fun, and I even saw most of that. They did that thing where they put the pilot on YouTube, and I watched that, and it looked pretty fun. But I don't have anything new to get. I probably would have watched. I would have at least started watching Discovery because of some of the casting choices.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if I would have given up by now. I have friends who are still watching it, but they're like, we're thinking about quitting. And then they're like, oh no, we think we like it again. Oh no. Now we're thinking about it. So I know they're all over the place.
Well, Doug Jones is so good in it, by the way. Gosh, he's so good in it.
Love Doug Jones.
But another thing is the representation. Not only is the representation just there, which is nice, done well. It's done very well. They're not, I mean, it feels like the type of people who are on the ship and doing things in the show are what you should have seen from the very beginning, given what Star Trek is supposed to represent. And it feels good to see it, you know, and to watch it. And the acting is, like I said, the acting is very good. some of the character moments aren't earned, though, as part of the whole thing with having the one main character. Like, something will happen to a character, but you don't even know that character because they haven't had a chance to really do anything in the show because the main character is taking up all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And even if that person is related to the main character in some way, you don't, I mean, the main character is reacting with a lot of drama and emotion, but you don't know their relationship at all because they haven't been given any lines even. So they really need to fix that. But it's, I don't know. It just, I'm not a huge Star Trek fan in general, but I think I have an appreciation for what Star Trek is.
I think of you as a pretty big Star Trek fan.
No, I don't.
Well, I think of you as a bigger Star Trek fan than me, and I consider myself a decent Star Trek fan.
Well, I at least appreciate, I think I do have a healthy appreciation for what it's supposed to represent and what it does represent in the minds of a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And I like that, and I like to see that succeed. I like to see that be its best self, if you will. And before we watched Discovery, I remember thinking about this actually expressly. I was thinking about this. Well, this is the most recent, you know, live action show. They have an opportunity to get representation right in a way that nobody has. They have an opportunity to get certain sci-fi things right in a way that nobody else has. There's a lot of opportunities here, and they've met the challenge in some cases and not in others, but it's, I appreciate that journey that Star Trek as a property has taken and continues to take, which means I'll probably always be interested in whatever Star Trek's doing, just to see, you know, how are they getting closer to what Star Trek in a way always should have been? How are they getting closer to that? And I'm interested to see it. I'm interested to see where they succeed. I'm interested to see where they fail. And for Abby and I both, we feel like Discovery is a worthy entry into that legacy. And, you know, hopefully in the future, there'll be even better stuff. But yeah, we like it. And I would recommend
it. I mean, it doesn't sound like a two-year-old going grocery shopping by himself. You know.
Anyway, how was your week?
I'll take that. Pretty okay, fairly uneventful, I think. We watched a couple of movies. I'm trying to remember. We watched a movie called In the Shadow of the Moon. Mm. And it's a recent movie. Netflix? I don't remember. It's really one of those movies that's good to go in cold. So if you're in the mood for something a little strange and one of those where you spend the whole movie being like, what's going on? But they do tell you what's going on. You should check it out. I didn't love it. Again, I give a lot of credit for novelty nowadays, and they kind of did something different, and I like that. But this has been coming up in a lot of places recently. If y'all want a good movie that's weird and very entertaining and incredibly thought-provoking and very progressive, that again I think is currently on Netflix, watch Sorry to Bother You. If you haven't seen Sorry to Bother You, you absolutely should see Sorry to Bother You. Lakeith Stanfield and Tessa, what's her name, Valkyrie, Tessa Thompson.
Yeah.
They're the two leads in it. There's a bunch of amazing people in it. It is a very weird, not too distant future sort of sort of social commentary thing that's also very funny and then goes just batshit insane, but it is really well made. I highly recommend it. We haven't seen too much. We finished third season Maisel. We started Schmigadoon.
What's that?
You don't know Schmigadoon? No. Schmigadoon is a thing from maybe a year now on Apple. It's a TV series. Okay. And it is in which long-term couple Keegan-Michael Key and Cecily Strong are out hiking and they get lost and they end up in the small town of Schmigadoon. And when they try to leave, It turns out that you can only leave if you find your true love. And they're apparently not each other's true love, because when they try and leave, they just come back. And the whole town is a musical. And like, it is like their music, like when they originally show up, they assume it's just like sort of a show they've stumbled into or whatever. But no, the whole place is a musical. And so they're trying to deal with their relationship issues and figure out how to get out while there's music going on everywhere. And it is a crazy cast of really good singers and things, people from Broadway and things like that. Alan Cumming plays the mayor. Jane Krakowski is in it. Kristen Chenoweth is in it. And a lot of these people who have done some of this stuff anyway, I was forget, Cecily Strong and Keegan Michael Key both have some musical background and can sing really well. They are only 30 minute episodes. There are only like 8 of them. I think that's for the best. That being said, it's very entertaining and I highly recommend it. And it's very self-aware, because again, they're like, our protagonists know they're in a musical. And considering that, so you get commentary because some of the musical numbers have inappropriate, like out of date ideas about things. And instead of covering them over, whatever, they point them out. And the show has incredibly diverse casting, which they explain just at the beginning. They're like, clearly it's a progressive show. We've got this colorblind casting going on, and then is never referenced again. And it's awesome. Like, there's just some people are black, some people, we got some Asians, we got all over, including people who are like related to each other. But I'm like, yeah, we just in the beginning, we're like, yeah, they did colorblind casting. So clearly they're thinking progressively, and then they just go on. So yeah, we're about 3 episodes into that. That's pretty fun. But yeah, I'm glad it's not an hour, and I'm glad it's not like, you know, a longer thing, because it's, you get it after a while. You're like, yeah, that's fun. We don't need a ton.
I would think that would give it sort of a community theater feel, because a lot of times community theater, they don't really have a lot of choices. So they might cast 2 people who could not be biological siblings, but there they are, because community theater, welcome to it.
It is real fun to do when you can tell a song is coming. And in fact, like Cecily Strong's character gets real excited when the cues begin. She's like, am I actually getting my own song? Oh my God, I think I am. Yeah, all right. And she pushes somebody out of the way so she can go to a different camera and sing the whole thing. But it's cute. Again, Apple TV is worth the price of Ted Lasso, full stop, the end. Watch it. If that is not enough, and for whatever reason you have Apple TV, I have a hard time making the sale for Apple TV, because other than specific shows, I don't watch it, because it is a very confusing interface where a lot of things will cost you money and don't come with it, but some things do, and it's confusing. But they are getting a stable of original programming that if you have Apple TV for some reason, you should be watching these things. You should be watching Severance. You should be watching Schmigadoon. You should be watching probably Mythic Quest or whatever. I stopped watching that, but I should get back to that. You should be watching Foundation. You think that's your kind of thing? Like, they're really starting to put together a good collection of original programming that I recommend. I think that's mostly, I've been watching just terrible, terrible movies. Just lots of old crappy movies. That's been fun. I think that's pretty much it. I don't think I got a lot of, I went to what will be my last session with my therapist, during which the intern is there. Never going to see her again. I told her, I said, as soon as you set up your solo practice, you let me know and I will ditch this other one and come see you. So yeah, Madison's got to move on. That's a little weird. All right. Looks like we have a few emails. Looks like a few people heard my whines and wrote in.
3 people. 3 people did.
Three people.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. All right. Okay. I do not get it, but my tablet is being weird. All right. All right. Can you read that one? My tablet's not behaving.
Sure.
The one I probably just made read about Beth's a life coach now or some shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's Beth, from Beth. Are you a life coach?
It's from Beth. She says, I'm doing some career coaching. One of the prompts is, what do you consider your three greatest accomplishments up to this point in your life and why? How would you answer this question for yourself? Beth wants to know. How would we answer that question? What do you consider your three greatest accomplishments up to this point in your life and why?
First of all, I was born. It's a significant accomplishment. A lot of people don't ever manage it. It was a big deal. And I would say, conservatively, it is the most significant thing that's happened to me my entire life. Far and away.
Okay.
Two. I got married. And they were going to deport Trish if I didn't. And I think that probably had a big impact on a lot of people.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know. Trish is Estonian, and she
was yeah.
On some kind of visa that ran out. So,
And three, I started this podcast. But wow. Being born is really the big one.
Yeah, that is the big one. Yeah. For sure, yeah.
I don't understand. Read me the actual prompt.
What do you consider your three greatest accomplishments up to this point in your life? And why?
I'm struggling with the word great.
Yes, indeed. What does that mean? Although one should also ask what accomplishment means. I mean, does it?
And three. I'm not clear on three.
What I mean is, do we categorize an accomplishment a thing that you at some point set out to do that was going to be difficult, you could conceivably have failed at it, but you didn't? Do we have to be that specific about what the thing is?
I don't know. It doesn't have to be something that you, I mean,
like I could say that I recovered from heart surgery. I accomplished that, but I mean, I didn't really, that wasn't a thing I decided specifically to do. I could have failed at it, I suppose, but I didn't have a lot of agency in whether or not I succeeded in it. So what does it mean?
I see this as a very difficult to parse question because I see a range of answers. And on one side, on one extreme of this question, this question is asking me, what are the top three things that you, Tony, have actively been responsible for occurring that have created the most benefit to humanity and society as a whole? On the other extreme, on the other side of this, I see, what are your three favorite things that ever happened? And I think you can interpret it anywhere in between there. That's a big range. And I feel like depending on how we translate, as you say, accomplishments and great, and some missing and implied articles and things, is very difficult to say. Because I think I have done there's not a lot that I'm like
proud of, because I'm like, I feel like this really helped the world or helped others.
It's very much
because it's all very easy. Like, I'm very pleased. I think I've talked about this before. Trish and I adopted a kid via child fund long time ago. She's getting quite old. And we really get a lot of joy out of that. I'm sending what for me is a negligible amount of money away every month. And it just is taken out of like, so like, that's something that I accomplished that I feel really good about. I'm also aware that it was of absolutely no effort or sacrifice on my part. It is a vanity project to help one random family in the Philippines. So
it seems like a question that a therapist would ask almost more to see how the person answers it than to pay attention to what the person says.
I think you are right on something right there. I think that is probably the value of this question, is to see how do you define what your great accomplishments are and how do you rank them? What's the source on this again? Beth didn't come up with this.
I don't know. Beth.
I thought she said.
She said that she's doing some career coaching, and one prompt is where the prompt comes from.
Oh.
Some material that has to do with career coaching, I suppose.
Where's the prompt, Beth? Tell us where the prompt is. You can't hide it. Get William to break your fingers. Yeah, I mean, I got personal accomplishments. I'm glad I graduated from both high school and college. I am very proud of having married a crazy woman. I did it on a bet. Nobody thought I'd go through with it. The book, I think I'm pretty consider that a big accomplishment, but none of these I think of as having great impact outside of maybe one or two other people. So like, in terms of, depending on how you define best accomplishment, I don't know that any of these qualify. but I don't think I've ever made any big waves, so to speak. My influence on the world is mostly a bunch of little ripples. So I don't know what you think. What are your best accomplishments?
Well, frequently for me, the only way to answer.
Not waffle cone, funnel cakes.
The only way to answer a question like this is to, in my own mind, try to be very specific about what it means. And I can let go of any possible definitions that wouldn't allow me even to answer. You know, like, for example, if I have to feel like the thing has had some kind of impact on the world, on anyone other than myself, it almost makes it impossible for me to answer. So I just have to think of it in terms of a thing that I didn't have to do. That's one thing. I didn't have to do it.
So this podcast is ineligible.
I didn't have to do it. It really was, even though there are always other factors in whether or not something gets accomplished. I'm probably the main factor in it getting accomplished. There are other ones, but I'm probably the main one. And when it's a thing that had an endpoint and it was finished. It's not like an ongoing thing. And now that that means I can look back on this thing that I had a choice in whether or not to do it. I was the main protagonist in it getting done. It got done. Now, how do I feel about it? And if I feel great about it, then I can put it on the list. And if I don't, well, then I can't.
Yeah. See, until this point, I thought we had one, but then you have to feel great about it.
You don't feel great about any of those things?
No, I was thinking of you.
Oh,
and all the things, and you were talking about like it has to be, and I had it narrowed down to one.
I'm sorry.
There was one accomplishment left. And then you said, how do you feel about it? And I'm like, oh, no, he doesn't. I don't think he.
Okay, sorry. You're right. That was I misspoke. Feel great about it. I feel better about this one than this one. Like, you, I can rank them. And no, something's, and that's the thing. Something's at the top.
The only one I could think of with the categories was your heavy, heavy involvement in failed Broadway musical Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark. And I hope at this point you aren't feeling like good about that. So if your best accomplishment ever is your heavy involvement, some would say sole creation of failed Broadway musical Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark, then I guess we have our answer, but I am chilled.
Okay.
To know this about you.
Are you done?
Are you, after bringing into the world failed Broadway musical Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark, then you have the guts.
You know, depends on how you define this
huge international platform and say,
depends on how you fail, how you define failure. I mean, you know,
I mean the families of those injured, a lot of injuries on that.
Debatable.
I just recently learned about the Carrie musical.
Oh, no, I think I knew about that one.
And it's a huge flop because it at the time of its run lost more money than any Broadway show ever. And it was I believe it was on Broadway for 5 performances.
Wow.
And then shut down. But what I found out is it's not because, as you might think, that's a terrible property to turn into a musical. Apparently, it went through a lot of major issues, partially involving the director and the people who created it not having the same vision, and partially when things went a little bit south, one of the producers took all the money they had left and flew away, never to be seen again. And in fact, apparently, some kid who was in the audience of one of those 5 performances grew up to be a theater director and decided he wanted to redo it. And in 2012, they actually redid it again. And it's apparently pretty good. I don't know. This is weird stuff I picked up when I'm researching the damage to society and humanity that your brain, your baby, failed Broadway musical Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark has wrought within the world. Some are calling it the beginning of the end, and they don't even specify of what. They just say the beginning of the end.
I mean, if all these things were true about me, I'd probably have a Wikipedia article based on me, and that would be something.
What I want to know is, given all of this and given the unmitigated gall to bring this up in the first place, what's number 2 and 3 for you? All right. Given the complicated process by which you are interpreting this question and setting aside for a moment,
not that complicated,
all of the stuff you had to do with failed Broadway musical Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark. It is complicated. You had to say the only way I can interpret this, and then you had to go through the process. It's complicated. My point is, okay, going through the process, have you got anything? I knew you were talking about your almost exclusive involvement in failed Broadway musical Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark. But I provided that. So I don't want to put words in your mouth, William, the godfather of failed Broadway musical Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark, right? So tell me, given your rubric, what are your best accomplishments?
Well, I'll have to think about it. I mean, There, you know, I've done a lot of things. It turns out I've done a lot of things in my life that I didn't have to do. I didn't have to do them. My participation was pretty vital to it getting done, and that it had an endpoint. For example, I've also written novels, three of them. I wrote a webcomic. I've written many, many songs. I do have a degree from college. I had to do that. So, I mean, I can come up with a lot of things that fit that those criteria. To rank them as the three greatest, I don't know, because that's the tricky part. What criteria am I using to decide, well, this is a greater accomplishment than something else? I mean, is it based on how long it took? Is it based on how much my heart was into it? Is it based on whether or not I'd ever done that before?
Critical reviews, cast member injuries. Yeah, there's a lot to factor in.
You know, I made films too.
I've heard.
Which I really enjoyed doing that. I thought they were okay. You know, one of them even got some kind of recognition at a film festival. So
I encountered something recently that used the phrase "inquire within" spelled with the E.
Hmm.
I can't remember where it was. Something did that. And I was like, hey, you stole that.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't.
Give us some highlights. Give us some honorable mentions. You don't have to rank them.
Okay.
Give us some of the good ones.
I have always felt pretty good about the webcomic. It's not perfect by any means, but I've always felt like that was a pretty cool thing that I did. I really like that. I have had people give me feedback on my music that was pretty meaningful. You know, things that they said, you know, whenever I'm depressed or something, I can listen to your songs and it makes me feel better, that kind of stuff. When people say things like that to you, it really makes you feel like, you know, something that seemed like a lark that you were just doing sort of as a hobby maybe has more meaning than that. So that's kind of nice. Recently, I might have told you about this. I was surprised to hear from an old friend of mine who I hadn't heard from in years. And she reached out to me just to tell me that she'd started reading my novels and thought they were really good. It was out of the blue. And that made me feel pretty good. I suppose if I think of greatest accomplishment, it's almost always going to relate to projects that I've started and was able to complete. And I haven't been able to complete all of the projects I've ever done, but a lot of projects I've started, I was able to complete. And so then I can afterwards sort of reflect and think, well, you know, how did that go? Or how do I feel about that? And it's kind of difficult when, you know, these are things like books and songs and stuff that where usually the quality of it is determined by how many people consume it, how many people give you feedback about it. So it's hard for you to decide just based on the fact. Yeah, money. I mean, it's hard for you to decide just based on your own feelings if it's any good, because, you know, it pretty much is determined by whether or not people consume it and whether or not they give positive feedback about it. Or like you said, one way to judge it is how much money does the thing make? But I have gotten feedback from specific people about just about everything I've done has gotten some piece of feedback that made me feel like, okay, you know, this is just one person, but what they're saying and what they're saying this means to them is really significant. So, you know, that's meaningful to me. The first film, the film that you and I did together, this is the first film I ever did and submitted somewhere. I thought the feedback that I got from the judges, especially one of the judges in particular, was very good. I mean, I thought it spoke well of everybody who was involved in the project and the work and effort they put into it. You know, I thought to this day, I will watch that video and I think your performance and Virginia's performance both were just excellent. You know, it's like, this is an amazing thing. I mean, we're just ordinary people, amateurs and whatever. And there are a lot of problems with this. You know, you can tell it's amateur, but it's like, it's not horrible. there are a lot of videos on YouTube that are in every single way worse than what we put together that have millions of views. I mean,
and several that we put up that are just podcast episodes.
But I mean,
I was trying to explain to Trish the other day some video, and I was like, it only has 16,000 views and it's been up for like a year or two. And I said, that is nothing in YouTube world. And I said, now I should clarify, that is 1,000 times more than my videos get on their best day.
Yeah.
But in terms of whether or not YouTube gives a shit, it's nothing.
But I mean, all things considered, of course, as an artist who's made all of this stuff, I would much sooner it be seen than not seen and get some kind of larger feedback than it's gotten. You know, when I look at all of the evidence and I look at all the feedback I've gotten and from whom I've gotten that feedback, I feel good about, you know, all of it. I'm glad I did it. I look forward to doing more things like it. And, you know, it would be hard to say, you know, what's a greatest accomplishment. I mean, because none of them seem like, you know, great in the first place. They were fun and I like them and I think they're good enough. You know, I think that in every case, I basically accomplished what I set out to do. And I think that's hard enough sometimes just to meet whatever standard you were looking for, much less to surpass it or go viral or whatever else people need or want to do. You know, and in many ways, that's more than most people. You know, there are a lot of people, I mean, I've known them, who talk about doing some of the things that I've done and that you've done, and they never do them. And I have done them. And again, not to any kind of acclaim or anything, but I did them. And I enjoyed doing them and I'm happy that I did them. And then some of the things I'm pretty satisfied with how they turned out. So
that's how I feel about my murders. They never got a lot of attention, but you know, I did them. Most people haven't murdered, you know, I did it right by definition. I mean, they're dead. So, you know,
and you didn't get caught. That's part of the, I mean, I think that's part of it, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, I don't think that one's that exciting because I'm an affluent white male. So that's not, you know, I mean, it's better than the alternative, but it's not. I'm not particularly proud of not getting caught. I'm proud of the killing. And that's the important part. You know, I know I did it. I'm just gonna put this out here because of circles you run in and things like that. So just in case, there is a series, a British series from I think the early aughts, called Darth Marenghi's Dark Place. Sorry, Garth Marenghi's Dark Place. It is 6 episodes long. It was created by a lot of people that were later involved in The Office, The Mighty Boosh, and a lot of sort of the absurdist comedy coming out of early 21st century Britain. It was created by Matt Holness and Richard Iowati. But if you know, oh crap, there's a bunch of people in it you would recognize if you know that sort of group of people. Anyway, the premise is, in the 1980s, a horror writer wrote, produced, funded his own TV show that network either canceled early because they didn't like it, or they just refused to air it because they didn't like it. I don't know. It's been thought lost. And he found old tapes of it, and it's done with interspersed present day commentary
from various people who acted in it or were involved in it. And so you're watching in 2000s a fake show within a show that was this supernatural 80s action drama called Dark Place. That's basically a hospital built on a hellmouth. And so weird supernatural shit happens every episode. And it is very seminal to sort of modern comedy takes, and it is worshipped by certain people. If you are one of those people who watched it and loved it in the day, or if you're one of those people who's heard about it and never had a chance to watch it, it is currently in its entirety on Amazon Prime, and you should check it out. The episodes are short. It is worth checking out. I will warn people, it hasn't aged great. A whole lot of the humor comes from, look how terrible these people are. They're like kind of sexist and kind of racist. And it's very much that era's. It's funny if we say horrible things, because the joke is that the person saying them is an idiot. I'm like, yeah, but you're still kind of saying, I mean, it's not as bad as some by any means, but it has some of that where I was like, eh. But you know, if you're like me and like to see a baby Richard Iowati acting like a person who can't act, it's fun. You can check that out. I can see by the change of shadows on William's face that it's about time for us to wrap up.
It is about time.
Yep. Yes. I don't know what we're gonna do. I don't feel comfortable with the plot of the episode called I Like the Killing. I did it like that, I don't like that. I mean, the real episode title should be A Failed Broadway Musical, Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark.
That's long.
It's a lot, yeah. Can we do the abbreviation, the FBM colon SP colon TOTD?
I mean, do whatever you want. You're the boss.
I don't like that. It feels messy. Let's see. If you've got a better title for whatever we end up putting up, mail it to last week. What the fuck?
Good does you ever feel? Have? Do you ever feel bad when someone asks a question and we don't really answer it? I do.
I feel bad when someone asks a question and we do answer it. I feel like that always goes worse. No, but if you're sending a question to the two of us, I feel like you have to be prepared for the fact that almost every question we're going to read it and say, and I'm going to say, this is a horrible question. And you're going to say, it's not really a question I can answer. And then we're going to talk about whatever the fuck we want to talk about. So your only hope when writing it is you essentially get one push. Your email is the rocket boost to send us in a certain direction, but you have like 3 seconds of thrust maximum. And after that, we're just drifting and you're at the mercy of whatever shows up. So you really got to figure out, push that, use that email to push them into a headspace that will be roughly in line with what you wanted to hear them say.
What do you think our therapist would say?
I'm fairly certain that's what both of our wives do when having conversations.
Yeah. What do you think our therapist would say based on how we answered these questions? I think I know what mine would say based on how I answered it.
Weirdly, I found myself deconstructing the question in the way that I think my therapist would. I was like, well, why are we asking this? What do we really want to know? Like, there's a lot, this question, there's so many ways this question could be answered. We need to figure out what the point of answering it is and how it works. I don't know. My therapist is very nervous because she's recently found out how much I talk about her on the podcast. I think she has some mixed feelings about that.
Oh.
Well, because I told her that story where I said I may talk too much, and she said, she leaned over to the intern and said, "You don't say." I told her, like, not only is that on podcast forever, but I've told like everybody I run into that story, because that story cracks me up. And I think in general, it's a good sign about, if it's a good therapist, they will work for you. It just takes a while for you to get to know each other. And she and I know how to communicate now, and it's very useful, but it did not start from day one. But yeah, if you'd like to go to the blog and tell us your favorite accomplishments, or your favorite of Williams, or how much you like killing people, go to the blog, magictalkinghat.com. And also write in with more rocket burst question things. The magical talking hat at gmail.com. Also listen in again next week, because we're going to keep doing this for as long as we're able and with as little eroticism as we can manage.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the magical talking hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.